Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, October 14th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and a tool I can use anytime I so desire to turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often because it usually promotes comments, questions, testimonials, or call-ins to help to ask us to help people move through the worksheet process. And we hope you do that. If you have any of those comments, questions, or testimonials, give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. And that will put a little question mark by your phone number and let me know you want to talk and we can have a conversation. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 287th day of the year. Today's workbook lesson simply reads, You are my goal, my creator, only you. The commentary reads, Where would I go but to heaven? What could be a substitute for happiness? What gift could I prefer before the peace of God? What measure would I seek and find and keep that can compare with my true identity? And I would rather live with love than fear. You are my goal, Creator. What would I desire to have other than you? What way but that which leads to you could I desire to walk? And what, except the memory of you, could signify to me the end of dreams and futile substitutions for the capital T truth? You are my only goal. Your offspring would be as you created them. What way but this could I expect to recognize myself and be one with my true identity? So that's the Course in Miracles lesson 287. And we're also doing the Course in Miracles experiment by Pam Grout. And her lesson 287 is titled, The Existential Shock of Being My True Self. She quotes Sarah Ban Breathnach as saying, the downside of spiritual law is once you understand a lesson, you can no longer play dumb. Pam writes, we might as well make it easy today. Lesson 287 gives me one goal, one simple goal, to be true to myself. And if I'm tempted to erect impediments to receiving and allowing and participating in love, I will clear them away with three simple questions. What could possibly be better than being true to my deepest being, than being connected to my inner source? Two, what could possibly substitute for happiness? And three, what gift could I possibly prefer over peace? So today I poo-poo all the futile substitutions for love and celebrate that nothing is better than the capital T truth. So that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and our Course in Miracles experiment commentary for today. As usual, we have about 50 minutes left to entertain your comments or questions, to hear your testimonials or entertain your suggestions for topics for the rest of this first hour's talk. So how can we support you? What is on your mind? How would it be useful for you to spend this next 50 minutes? 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. It would be appreciated. It makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work when people call in and give us direction about what would be most useful for them. And it also makes it easier for the flow and makes it more relevant when people let us know what's going on in their life right now, today, that a specific aspect of our discussion about these tools might bring them some benefit. Yesterday I was talking about one of the commitments from the 15 commitments to conscious leadership. And of course, sometimes when people hear that, they think, well, I'm not really a leader, and that doesn't really relevant for me, and I don't own a business, or I don't lead a team. And of course, that's not really what this is about. This is about living my own life in a way that is with balance and integrity, that minimizes my difficulties, maximizes applying my strengths, and living into the life that is possible for me as part of this flow of creation. Yesterday we were talking about the commitment of growing in self-awareness and committing to regarding everything that happens in my life as an opportunity for learning. Everything, including and sometimes especially those things I don't want. And the benefit that happens when I choose to look at whatever unfolds in life as perfect lines me up with people like Byron Katie. And Byron Katie says, of course I know that everything that's happened in my life so far has been perfect because it happened. And when I assume that perspective, since there's this whole range of things that I have no capacity to change in any way because they have already happened, and when I assume that they were perfect just as they are, and I ask questions about What might I learn from this? And how can I move forward from this space? I put myself in a much better, more flexible, more loving, more respectful position than when I fight against what has happened. And that's our goal in this work, to make our lives better, one way or another, to go with the flow, to ask to be taught by life, to be constantly learning. And that's one of the things that made the chapter of the book on commitment number 2 so powerful for me. This is a commitment to constantly learn, not just about technology, not just about physics, not just about botany, but to constantly learn about myself. I commit to grow in self-awareness, to become better and better at maintaining the vigilance about what's happening inside my energy system, which doesn't belong to me, but it is something I've been given some domain over. And so I have the ability to choose where I focus this creative energy that I've been given from somewhere, something, somehow. And it's where I focus that energy that determines my experience of life. The third commitment, the third chapter in the book, the third commitment, has to do with committing to feeling my feelings. And in this work, they're a little bit different than the Richard Moss stuff we were talking about last week or the week before, where he discusses feelings as simply the energy, and he separates that from emotions, which are the thoughts about those energies. And in this work, they kind of blend it, but they have very much the same recognition that this thing I call my body is an energy system, and the energies that flow through it are perceived by me, and I can retrain myself to be aware of those energies. I say retrain myself because we were all born very aware of the energies in our bodies. Tightness, tension, hunger, thirst, joy, sadness, pain, anger, we were all very aware of these as infants. And over the course of time of our lives, we were conditioned out of that awareness. So this is a new thing for a lot of adults when they teach this 15 commitments of conscious leadership and they're dealing with CEOs and board members and vice presidents and executive vice presidents in these meetings. They're talking to people who've spent decades denying and suppressing their feelings. There's decades of living in what they call the below-the-line commitment. And the below-the-line commitment is the unconscious commitment. And in this work, for the third commitment, the below-the-line commitment is that I commit to resisting, judging, and apologizing for my feelings. I will repress, avoid, and withhold them. So these people teaching the 15 commitments of conscious leadership walk into these executive meetings and they're encountering people who've spent decades resisting, judging, apologizing, and denying and avoiding their feelings. And they come in and they say, hey, let's all talk about our energies. Let's all get more in touch with the energy system we call our body and pay attention to what it feels like right behind our eyes and in the back of our throat and the tingling in our lips or the quivering of our chin and the sinking feeling in our stomach. Let's pay attention to that. Own them and agree to feel them all the way through to completion. Let's agree to let them come and locate them in our bodies and then move, breathe, and vocalize them so that these energies move all the way through us. They reference something I've talked about before on the show, and this Jill Bolte Taylor. I think her book is titled My Stroke of Insight. I might have misquoted the title before as My Stroke of Genius, but she's a neuroscientist who had a stroke and observed the process, and when she recovered, she studied it and wrote about it, and she's been teaching about it ever since. And what she says in her work is that they've got really solid evidence that when we experience an energy, allow it, feel it, locate it in the body, move a little and vocalize it, it'll move, it'll go through us in about 90 seconds. Of course, if we don't do that, if we resist it, we fight against it, we try to run from it, we lock it down in our system, and we'll get to, because we're adding energy into it, we will get to experience it for extended periods and repeatedly. And they've got some wonderful examples in the book about how difficult it is to be working with people, these business professionals who are so well trained at denying and running and hiding from their relationships, and how resistant they are to taking a different approach. But one of the things they know in coaching people and in business is that emotional intelligence is as, if not more, important than your intellectual intelligence. The good news is, for most of us, emotional intelligence can be improved. We can learn about it. So the definition they use for emotion is emotion, energy in motion. And they say at its simplest level, emotion is energy moving in and on the body. Or, in other words, feelings are physical sensations. Well, when we're working with somebody in a support group, we frequently ask them to get in touch with, locate what they're feeling, where they're feeling it. And it's a critical part of every reality management worksheet, as we're going to get clear about and get specific about what our true nature is and what we're experiencing in terms of our energies and emotions. And although it isn't as specifically spelled out in the worksheet, it's critical that we allow ourselves to have those energies, to feel them and work with them. So it's very, very similar to what they're talking about in the 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. They've actually located in their work the areas in the body where we feel these various emotions. And they have specified 5 basic emotions that all other emotions are aspects of or branch off from. And they list those 5 emotions as anger, sadness, fear, joy, and sexual feelings. And then they locate the spaces in the body where we normally feel the energies that go with our label of anger. That's usually in the jaw, the back of the neck, or across the shoulders. Sadness, they say, is usually in the eyes or behind the eyes, in the throat or the upper chest. Fear is usually in the belly. Joy is usually at the core or in the spine. And the sexual feelings are usually in the pelvis, genitals, and erogenous zones. And they have found this very useful over the years to help people begin to map out where these energies are moving in their system. And like most of us, when we're working with people and trying to get them to identify their emotions, we say, so what are you feeling right now? Most of the responses they get are thoughts. Well, I'm feeling that if I lose my job, I'm in big trouble. I'm feeling that my manager has no right to make that evaluation. I'm feeling that I should have taken that speech class in college. All of these are thoughts, not emotions. And so there's a training process for a lot of people, and we run into this in the support group from time to time, where we start to teach people the worksheet process, and they don't know what they're feeling. And they don't know how to label what they're feeling. So skill building in this area is important. And what they say is, after we start identifying these five basic emotions, in their work they've got five basic emotions, and they help people figure out where they're located in their body, then they can start coaching them on how to be with it, locate it in your body, breathe, allow and accept and appreciate the sensation, and then match your experience with your expression. So again, a lot of times they notice somebody is, you know, got a growl in their voice, or they're snapping at somebody, or their fists are clenched, or their lips are pursed, and they say, oh, how are you feeling? So I'm feeling fine. But it comes out more as a bark or a snapping than it does being in congruence with the words, I'm fine, or everything's good, or I'm calm, or I'm relaxed. And they start working with people to get them to understand there's a wisdom in these energies that flow through us. And the wisdom is located in three separate centers of our intelligence, the head, the heart, and the gut. And there's increasing evidence from our neurologists and our endocrinologists and our biologists that we have definitely got three separate centers of intense activity. If you don't want to call it three brains, at least, you know, there's no denying that there's intense activity. There's neuronal activity. There's hormonal activity. There's neurotransmitter activity in these three areas, the head, the heart, and the gut. And because they're such powerful energy centers, if we live our lives without tuning into them or letting ourselves take advantage of the information that they offer, we are really hamstringing ourselves in terms of our functioning. And what they say here is that each of the five core emotions invites us to grow in awareness and in knowing. So here are some of the learnings that each emotion can give a leader. The emotion of anger tells a leader that something is not now or is no longer of service, or that anger can tell the leader that something is not aligned and must be changed or destroyed so that something more beneficial can replace it. They go on to say this emotion tells a leader what a boundary needs to be set, or when a boundary needs to be set, or when an existing boundary is being violated. Without access to anger, leaders are dangerous because they don't have a clear no response. They don't have a sword for cutting and destroying when both are called for. And when I read that here, I understand that, you know, if you've listened to the show a long time, you've heard us talk about how my negative emotions are most useful in my life as an alarm system to tell me that my perception is off, that I'm in error. And this writing, this system, is more in alignment with Dr. Henry Cloud and his book, Necessary Endings, where he talks about if you don't have the ability to set a limit and say no, then you stick with things that are a drain to you, that they're a drain to the system or the workplace that you're working in, and or they grow into an abusive pattern, and you just let it drag on and on. So then they talk about fear. They say that fear tells a leader that something important needs to be known. One form involves something that is not being faced. Fear is the body's way of saying, wake up. Like the pedestrian who comes to a curb and feels a wave of fear run through his body and then looks up and sees an oncoming car run a red light. Leaders who access this fear or lack access to this fear become dangerous because they don't adequately sense dangers and or they're living in a sense of denial of what's actually happening. And another form of fear can tell a leader that something new is there for them to learn. Fear will invite your full attention and presence. For instance, a leader's first negotiation is not too different from a driver's first experience behind the wheel of an automobile. That energy that you might call fear the first time you go to drive tells you to get here, get present, stay alert, and it educates us to the fact that we don't fully know how to do this, whatever this driving thing is, and all of these skills that will require our full awareness. Then there's the energy of sadness. They say sadness tells a leader that something needs to be let go of, something needs to be said goodbye to and moved on from. Sadness, they say in their work, is the energy of loss. Sadness will let a leader know that something meaningful is going away. It could be a person, a dream, a vision for the company, a belief, an opportunity. And they go on to say that leaders who can't feel the sadness are dangerous because these people hang on to old ideas, people, projects, and dreams long after they've served their purpose, which is exactly the point in Henry Cloud's book on necessary endings. Then there's this energy of joy. Joy tells a leader that something needs to be celebrated, appreciated, or laughed at, and someone needs to be patted on the back. Countless leaders fail to create a culture of celebration and appreciation because they're cut off from their joy. That's their belief. In their experience, people are as afraid of feeling their joy all the way through to completion as they are afraid of feeling their anger, fear, and sadness, and especially their sexual feelings. They can mistakenly believe that it's inefficient or boastful to feel the joy emotion. Here's how leaders who can't experience joy are dangerous, because they can't adequately celebrate and appreciate either themselves or others. And unconsciously, they get committed to limiting things that would lead to celebration. The last of their core energies of they call feelings are sexual feelings. Sexual feelings are the energy of creation and creativity. They tell the leader that something new wants to be birthed, to be created, or to come into the world. If you think of a leader and a team as being pregnant with ideas and innovations. Now, because of abuse, sexual feelings in the workplace, our society has tried to legislate them out of the environment. And we understand the reason behind this, but we believe that in doing so, they've limited creative potential. So for the purpose of their discussion, they want to differentiate between sexual lust, which is a desire to have sexual relationships with another, and sexual creativity, which leads to the birth of new ideas and innovative breakthroughs. They say we've actually known many people who've had the act of sex without any sexual feelings. In fact, they have sex when they're hungry, sad, scared, angry, and they're repressing feelings so they don't feel anything at all. Leaders in teams that get open to their sexual creative energy often experience a flow of the life force when a great new idea is being created, and that has nothing to do with the sexual act physically, one human body to another. It has to do with energy flow in the system. And when it's done with clarity, awareness, and good boundaries, it leads to creativity. So that's some input on their idea about five basic emotions and some of the ways it's different from what we talk about in Mindshifter support groups and here on Mindshifter Radio and the Reality Management Worksheet. So what does that stir up for people? 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, and we can have a conversation. We've got about 26 minutes left before the second hour begins. How can we support you today? Susan, are you there?
I am. Hi, Dr. Tim.
Hello.
Thanks for reading that wonderful stuff. I don't know where to begin because it's just so perfect for me today, and I hope for other people too. I am in my son's house because all of his family are out at school or work. I am taking a rest from my grandson, who is going through what I find extremely scary, probably still taking drugs, insisting he is not, vacillating between mania with the strangest thought processes and moods, swings, all the way from, as I said, mania all the way from there to terrible anxiety and sadness into tears. He's 21 years old. He's living with us. He desperately wants to go back to school. He's bored living with us. He is horrified that he took so many different kinds of drugs and resulting in no sleep for nearly a month except fitfully, so that he totally crashed. I told you a lot of this. So he's living with us, and I have been living in a state of fear and sadness that's beyond what I've experienced on an ongoing basis most of my life. And I'm using the tools, but I feel as if I am one person fighting a tidal wave, and I don't think I'm equipped to...
Now,
I can provide a safe...
Is that your internal tidal wave, or is that the grandson tidal wave?
Well, good question, because of course it's internal and triggered by this huge challenge of a not-well grandson. So I'm just listening to what you've been reading and re-owning the fact that my reactions are my reactions, locating them where they are, sick feeling in the stomach, tightness in the chest. Mostly it's in the core area and not behind my eyes, although it could be. I can understand that. And I'm not quite sure why I'm even telling you all this, because I know I've got my work cut out for me, and I think I have an idea of what needs to be done. But I'm here on the radio show.
For you or for your grandson?
What needs to be done for me? For my son, grandson, I do not know what I can do for him except love him and listen to him. But he's sneaking upstairs in the middle of the night, kneeling by my bed, hoping I'll wake up. Well, I'm a light sleeper, so to wake up with somebody's face in your face is kind of unusual, to say the least. So I'm finding lots of physical reactions in me, unable to eat enough, unable to sleep enough, partly because of what he's doing and partly because sleep is a challenge anyway. And sadness and feelings of helplessness because I don't know what to do for him. And my daughter keeps calling and saying, I'm so grateful that he's safe in your house. You're just keeping him safe for the time being. We don't know what to do. I feel trapped. That's why I've escaped to my son's house for a while and listening to the radio as if it's just nectar to my soul, just to hear what feel like sane and helpful words. So I don't really have a question for you. I'm just making a report and seeing what you might have to say about that.
Well, the thing that comes to my mind is the exercise that Dr. Michael Rice pulls out every once in a while about detaching. And it's a visualization of imagining that there's a beam of light that comes straight at you, parallel to the ground, but right at where the point where your eyebrows meet, where the third eye is in the Eastern traditions. And that one that comes straight down from directly above your spine, right through the center of your head. And where those two beams of loving light would meet is this location you can visualize. And it is very useful for a lot of people to visualize in that center some person, some issue, some event in their life that they keep obsessing about, that they've got a lot of negative thoughts about. And imagine holding an image of that person or that event or that dynamic in your life in that position in the center of your head. And then with breath and softening, ask for assistance from whoever you want. You can say Holy Spirit or Ruka or God or Jesus or your spirit guide or whatever. Ask for assistance in releasing your attachment to that thought, person, or event. And just breathe and soften and notice what you experience in a shift of energy. Doing what we usually encourage people to do, which is continue the breath work, soften and breathe, and just notice as you gently repeat, asking for assistance in releasing your attachment to that person or that dynamic or that situation.
So to get it straight, it's where the third eye, if you put a beam straight from your
You're
third
looking
eye,
for a spot in the center of your brain.
Got it. Okay.
You're looking
that's what
for
I was
this
asking.
Imaginary spot right in the center of your brain. And you just visualize that there is a spot there that you can hold your attention and you can hold an image of this person or this situation or this dynamic that you're stuck on, that you're stuck obsessing about. As you do that, you hold the image there, then you just ask for assistance from some non-logical, non-linear energy, insight, intuition, creativity, holy power, whatever you want to think of it as, you're asking for assistance in releasing your attachment to that person or that energy.
Good. That's something to do, something I can do. That's good.
Yeah, I would highly recommend that you do it. perhaps even right now while you're still on the call.
I am doing it. I am doing it, and I feel a lot of energy coming right through my body and out my fingers and my feet. So I don't know what that means or anything. It's just something's moving is all I understand.
Yeah, and that's what we want people to move outside the tendency to try and make sense of it and just let it be. That's what this whole talk about emotions in the 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership is about. We're not analyzing my I'm you know, their procedure is not analyze it and figure it out. Their procedure is I commit to feeling my feelings all the way through to their completion, whatever that might look like. Whenever they come,
yeah.
I'm going to locate them in my body, and then I'm going to move, breathe, and give voice to them, vocalize, not necessarily with words, but vocalize so that these energies move through me.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Tim, could I ever share this? Like, if I had Jacob in front of me right now, and if I did what you're saying, I would start vocalizing for sure, and it wouldn't be words. It would be sounds, and I would start moving. And he, in his state of mind, might really understand that. He might be able to join me in that.
Is this the same grandson that you were talking about just the other day who had 2 ibuprofen and seemed to be transformed?
Yes. He stopped the ibuprofen, and he's on Abilify and Effexor and Seroquel at night, and also a drug for anxiety, brand new, that I don't know the name of. But he came out of his latest doctor's appointment saying that his doctor implied or hinted that he should be microdosing LSD. And I said, Jake, I'm almost positive. No, he knows your history. I wrote it all down and sent it into the portal because this is a new doctor for him. Gave him a background of what had been happening to you, to the best of my understanding, and I don't think he would recommend that. But he wants desperately to take it. It was the way he felt better. He felt really good microdosing, but he also didn't sleep and then crashed after a month of no sleep. I think it
but
accumulated.
But chances are he wasn't exactly microdosing.
Well, that's
right?
A good thing. He did. I mean, good point, because he did say that he took a double dose of straight out LSD toward the end of it all, but he hadn't slept for the entire month, and he was agitated enough to want to do something drastic. So the microdosing had a negative effect, along with the mania and feeling happy and productive. And when he says productive, the produce of that month of microdosing produced snippets of music that I didn't think were up to his standard at all. And he began to doubt himself and so forth. Anyway, I'm going in 10 directions now as I talk to you, but going back to just going into that point, observing it, feeling what I feel, and detaching from it, I want to do that, to let him just do what he's doing. And not, you know, it's like giving up the goal in the worksheet all over again. I want him well. I want him to feel well. I want him to be safe. He's not. And I have no control over that. And when I say that, I feel extremely sad about that. I can't help him except to be there and love him and take care of myself, which I'm struggling to do. But... so,
well, we'd certainly be happy to support you in doing that, taking care of yourself, doing the things that you can do. And what people don't realize is that as a an action, some might even call it an intervention, is one of the more powerful things I can do, because there I'm leading by example.
Yeah. If he becomes, I suppose so. I don't think he's observant enough. He's very, very aware of himself.
And when I'm leading by example, I don't have influence over whether or not somebody takes that example and uses it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's true.
When
yeah.
I'm leading
right.
by example, I'm not doing an intervention in someone's life. I'm just being the best I can be.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to other
people. I keep thinking of...
to choose what they do with that.
Yeah. Michael had mentioned, I think this is Michael, that humility is seeing the highest and best in oneself and the other and acting only from that vantage point or platform or whatever. I love that idea. And I'm trying to apply it, even though I'm suspicious that I'm tempted to run into the basement apartment where he's living in our house, which is very dark. It has no windows, but it's nicely set up. He dives down in there, and I'm imagining he has a stash of stuff here and there, you know, and I'm tempted to run down there and find it. And I doubt I would find it because he's smart. And maybe I'm even wrong about this, but if I ask him outright, he says, no, I've been clean for a month. And he looks me right in the eye. So I just have to keep letting go, observing what I feel and let go, let him do what he's doing, let him do it, and then keep loving him, I guess. And that's not hard to do, loving him. I mean, we're sort of bread in the bone type of thing because he's my grandson. But yeah, thanks for listening to all this.
Well, you know, the work is your work. And the more you do
right.
it, the better you get. And then if and when he's ready to use that living example, it's there for him.
Mm. Yeah. All right, Dr. Tim, I'll keep listening.
All right, and just keep feeling those emotions and perhaps, you know, once or twice more, do that release practice and observe what comes of it, because it is not magical, and yet it is powerful.
Mhm. Yeah. Thanks.
All right.
Again,
blessings.
Always. Thank you.
Blessings. So we have about 10 minutes left for comments, questions, answers, observations, recommendations. Tonight is a Thursday, so we have a support group coming up. And we had another instance on Tuesday of somebody trying to join the Tuesday group by using the Thursday group login. So I will repeat that if you go to mindshiftersacademy.org website, there is information on how to join our support groups, but it's a separate login information packet for Tuesdays versus Thursdays. And we'd be happy to have you join us, or happy to have you pass that information along to anybody you think might benefit from joining us. Almost every Tuesday and Thursday from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central. And this last Tuesday we watched Guy Finley lecture and then had discussion and processing, people were processing how that the basic tenet of Guy Finley's lecture, which is almost exactly the work that Michael Rice puts in his worksheet process, is so powerful for us, each of us in our own way, And sometimes just getting clear about that brings enough clarity that people start moving through their issues better, or they have a better time getting a productive result from their worksheet process. So it's one of the reasons we engage in those talks, lectures, etc. And we'd be happy to have you join us. Also, give us a call and let us know what your recommendation is for book titles or podcasts or spiritual teachers that really resonate with you. If you're listening to this on the archives, please send us an email, tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And let us know. Thoughts, comments, questions. I had the privilege yesterday of interviewing Dr. David Grand, who is the creator of the brain spotting technique. And I continue to work on the technical glitches that would not allow me to upload audio files to podcast, blog talk. And hopefully in the next week or so, I'll figure out what that glitch is about and be able to share some more of the interviews I've done for the On Your Mind podcast hosted by Journey's Dream. And it's available at journeysdream.org/podcast. That's another free resource. Another wonderful group of people who are trying to change the way people think and talk about mental health, change the narrative on mental health to one in which optimal health and well-being is possible and expected, and where they offer resources to people that are alternatives to the let's go through a checklist of symptoms and then add these medications to your energy system based on whatever symptoms you report. And while there is some benefit to that in times of crisis, most people who study this stuff understand that that's not healing. That's not removing anything at a cause level. And to really make progress, we have to find out what's causing these upsets, these disruptions in our functioning. And once we find out what that cause is and we start to address it directly, either through nutrition and or diet and exercise and or life purpose, things start to get better, oftentimes by leaps and bounds. I think I mentioned before, I'll put it in today's recording as well, that when we were doing the Integrative Mental Health Summit, which was hosted by Journey's Dream and Mensa Medical, we had a presentation by Dr. Walsh, who basically works with nutrition in psychiatric areas. And he wrote a book that I think he said about 12 years ago that highlights a lot of what they've learned. And he talked about 7 basic areas where there are imbalances in our body and brain chemistry in this energy system that are responsible for the vast majority of the psychiatric, psychological symptoms that people go to a doctor for help with. The name of his book is Nutrient Power by Dr. Walsh. And the 7 imbalances include methylation, over-methylation, under-methylation, a zinc deficiency or excess, a copper overload or deficiency, a folate deficiency or overload, a pyrrole disorder, a toxic metal overload, or fatty acid imbalances. So if you're looking to help somebody and you understand that the medications that our psychiatric profession offer people are not cures. They are simply placeholders. They are symptom suppressors. And you want, you know, get access to some people who are doing actual healing work and looking at various systems in the body that get out of balance and that create the need for nutrient change and or detoxification. That's one good place to start. Nutrient Power, a book by Dr. Walsh. So we're nearing the end of our first hour. Michael and Jeannie should be here for the second hour. And we'll be back again tomorrow. And I encourage you to pipe up and let us know with your comments or questions what would be a useful expenditure of our time in the next hour, Friday, and what topic you'd like us to explore and whether or not you're benefiting from some of the points I'm raising from the 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. And if you think about it, remember to either join us tonight yourself or pass the information along to somebody who might want to join us for Thursday's Mindshifter support group. All that information is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. And that'll do it for today's show. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tam. I appreciate you.
All right. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Thursday, October the 14th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And Susan, I'm going to turn your mic back on. I caught just part of your conversation with Dr. Tim, so while I'm waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I've heard a lot of people using the microdosing to get past depression and post-traumatic stress and those kinds of things. However, it's usually done with like a psychiatrist or psychologist or someone who's familiar with the microdosing so that when they are microdosing that they are also processing, and I don't know a lot about it, but from what I do know, you know, like they're given a microdose, but they're also then able to process through once the microdosing takes effect or whatever. And so it's not just, you know, drugging something down or whatever, but it's allowing them to process without the emotional attachment to whatever it is they're processing. Does that make sense?
Yes, well, just the first part, especially just the idea that the oversight of a wise psychiatrist who understands microdosing would be fantastic. I like the idea that it could be. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I apologize. Go ahead.
I just like the idea that it could be used. Okay.
Yeah. Now, we have a center in Johnson City, which Johnson City is a lot larger city than here in Bristol. It's probably a 30-minute drive from here. And I'm not familiar with how they do it or what they do, but I know that they do the microdosing and the processing and things like that. It's not just that they prescribe it and leave the patient on their own to take it as they will, you know, but that when they are microdosing, that they're actually able to look at a situation and process through it or talk about it or whatever without being emotionally attached,
you know, that they can just, it's kind of like still point breathing, that you're able to just move through it and process it without the attachment to the outcome or the attachment to the feeling or anything else. But there, it's, I believe that they actually have them, like, you know, in their clinic, and they give them a microdose, but then they also, you know, process with them and work through whatever's going on for them and let them talk and let them process and make sure that they're, you know, back grounded again before they let them go again. It's not that they just give it to them and let them dose themselves however they want to. I'm not sure, but I think that from what I understand, that's kind of how they do it here. And, you know, I haven't experienced it or anything, so I don't know. I'm kind of talking just from hearsay. But you might want to check and see if, and maybe you've got a clinic there, or maybe even whoever prescribed it for him can give you some more information about it. But
do they have live-in rehabilitation? Is it a facility for living in?
No. It's just that they go there like you would go to see, you know, like if you went to a psychiatrist and you spend an hour in their office and talked or whatever. It's kind of like that, except that they give them a microdose, and I don't know if it's LSD or if it's, you know, something else, but that they actually spend an hour or two or three or I don't know, however long it takes for the process. And they have them, you know, from what I've looked at some videos and things on it, that they, you know, maybe have them lay down and be comfortable, and they have music playing or something, and they allow them to just go through whatever comes up for them in that time. And, you know, Dr. Tim's absolutely right. If they're just microdosing and just, you know, drugging themselves to not feel or not think or whatever, it's definitely not going to get rid of the cause. It's just another Band-Aid. But if he were able to process while he's microdosing, then he might be able to move through it. But I do know that they're using it for PTSD and depression and different things like that. Michael has joined us, and he can probably add more. Michael, what we're talking about is Susan's grandson and doing microdosing. And I said, you know, I don't know a whole lot about it, but I know that there's a clinic here where the patient actually goes in and they stay however long it takes for the process, and they give them a microdose of something, not necessarily LSD, but they allow them to process through it. It's not just that they prescribe it to them and let them go dose themselves. And she's talking about, you know, that the possibilities or whatever of her grandson going, oh, Michael just dropped, so hopefully he'll get back on and I'll finish talking. Give him just a minute. He must have just lost connection.
I wonder if you could send me the name of that place, and I could ask them if there's a facility up in Pennsylvania that we could take Jacob to.
Sure, absolutely. Michael, what I was saying is that if they're microdosing, they absolutely need to be processing it too, and not just dosing themselves so that they don't feel. That it allows them to process without the emotional attachment. But so she was asking if I could send her the information of the place in Johnson City, and maybe they can tell her if there's a place up there.
Right.
It's not a place where they go and stay and live. They just go for however long the session takes.
Right. What are you talking about microdosing? I mean, he's been on
she
LSD. Is someone suggesting doing microdosing, Susan?
He told her that he was microdosing, but what he was doing was doubling up on it.
Yeah.
He was microdosing, and then he took a double dose of straight LSD and crashed. But on the microdosing, he thought he was extremely creative, and he kept saying, I don't need to sleep, and he didn't sleep for a month, and then he had a complete psychotic thing, which you heard about already.
Right.
But he keeps talking about going back on...
Go ahead, Susan.
He keeps talking about going back on microdosing because he felt so good on it. And he's living with us, and we're not giving him money. I imagine he has some stuff hidden in the basement. I wouldn't know. He swears he's not taking anything. But he was better for a couple of days, and now he's
this morning we went for a walk. He's completely manic. He was up in the night visiting us in the bedroom, asking to go for walks and obsessing about this, that, and the other. He's really gone off again, really off. And I'm up at my son's house so that I can talk freely. And he doesn't know I'm up here. If he did know, he would follow me up here. He's sticking to me like glue.
Right.
Does
he get, or is he capable of comprehending that while he says I was feeling great, he really, this is the end result of it, that it isn't working at all? Does he get that, or does he still believe that he was doing just fine and this is some kind of an anomaly?
Both. It depends on which Jacob I'm talking to. And I'm telling you, this is like a boy with at least two personalities now.
Right. Sounds like he needs some serious professional help. And I wouldn't suggest he go off doing microdosing under supervision or not under supervision. I think he needs some straight-up help to start with, you know, and maybe someone who understands microdosing if he was doing LSD or what else he was doing. I just don't know. I'm not familiar with that arena. But it sounds like he's gotten himself into some serious challenges.
Well,
How are you doing?
I'm exhausted. But he's seen a psychiatrist, but it's all conventional medicine. He's got three different prescriptions for, you know, one for psychosis, one for anxiety, and one for sleep, and another one for anxiety and depression or something. And this is painful to watch because I know this is, as Amy said, it's a Band-Aid. It's not addressing things.
Most antipsychotics, one of the side effects is psychosis.
God.
It's crazy, but that's the practice of medicine today.
Well,
I'd be doing my best to get him to lay down and breathe if I could. That would, you know, tend to oxygenate him, get energy moving through his system. If you can get him to put his hand in the Avacyn, get some circulation going, chances are with the amount of drugs that he's been using that he may have also, you know, one of the responses to the body to something that's attacking, especially delicate parts like the brain, is to create congestion, to, you know, try to keep the toxins out of tissue, and that congestion will tend to restrict circulation. Get his circulation back in order, you know, wherever congestion is, and it's going to tend to start to normalize, or at least give him a chance to get there. So if he'll do it, I'd get to start putting his hand in the Avacyn a couple times a day and see if that helps to support his body working its way back to normalcy with circulation.
Yeah, I lent it to my friend Gina a couple of weeks ago. I haven't heard from her how it's doing with her hand, so I'll have to get it back.
That'd probably be a good idea. I think that it's, to me, would sound important, because if he's done that much of, you know, legal and illegal medication, then the body's protecting itself, and there's going to likely be congestion happening. And I think that's part of why there are so many side effects, aside from the fact that at the levels at which he's dosing, whichever it is, you know, those things are not discriminatory. There are, you know, receptor sites for different functions. You know, we think of something as being a mental function, but there are receptor sites in the gut for it. There are receptor sites in the skin cells for it. And when they, you know, they don't, like where the body says, oh, I need this in these cells, you know, a micro amount of a particular piece of information or chemical, the body produces that. But when they go in and they do 10 milligrams, which is 100 million times what the body's doing, that those molecules are not discriminatory. So they'll go and plug the receptor sites in the brain, they'll plug the receptor sites in the heart, they'll plug the receptor sites in the liver, in the gut, and now communication shut down. Now you got a whole other realm of problems. So one of the best things that I would think of doing, would, along with, you know, of course, as much support as you get from somebody who really knows their stuff with the drugs, is detoxing him. Is getting that stuff cleared out of his system.
Well,
Bless his heart. It sounds like he's gotten himself in a pickle.
He does, and he's terrified of going off drugs. His dad was a big pill-popping person, still is. And
right.
So he says, maybe I need this drug, maybe I need that drug. Could you ask the psychiatrist to get me this, to get me that? The mindset is
if he's asking for drugs, if he's asking for drugs by name, it sounds like he's been doing a lot more playing around with him than you'll probably ever know. And
I'm sure that's true. I found long needles, like, you know, heroin type needles in his apartment when I was cleaning it out. And we've never spoken of heroin as part of the picture of what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow, Grandma, you've taken on a load here.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't want it.
No.
And I'm tired and I'm sick and I'm up at my son's house hiding out here for a while because he sticks to me like glue. Wants to go for walks, needs to talk. It's exhausting. So I've been doing my work, but
this is Luke's
told
brother?
Dr. Tim. Yeah, Jacob. Yep. And Luke is convinced he's taking microdosing, and his father and mother both think he is. But when I say, are you doing that stuff? He looks me right in the eye and says, no, I've been clean for a month. But he doesn't act clean.
Well, it's easy enough to find out how clean he is and take him in for a test. Get him tested. You know, and you can test him and tell him you want to test him under the guise of, well, if you've got any residual, we need to find out what it is so we can get it out of your body. Because you're not, you're not acting clean. So there's obviously some residual. We need to find out what it is and get you cleaned out. And maybe what he needs to do is go into a detox program.
Yeah, he will refuse that. He was a week in the hospital and he was just felt as if he was in hell. And it wasn't a great program. It was mainly just to watch you and have you play Parcheesi and cards and watch what you do and medicate you up to the gills.
Yeah.
Wasn't good. And so
it's a business.
He's refusing. Yeah, he's refusing to go to a place like that. I feel as if I am Tim and I are his hospital, but we have no tools. We have our tools to help ourselves get through it.
Yeah.
But I'm at a complete loss, Michael. So anyway, checking in.
You know, there are some programs around that are not run by the medical profession, but are run with the support and assistance of a medical doctor, but they're run by people who've been through the mill and know the routine. Maybe he'd be willing to do something like that, be a whole different thing than going into a hospital where, you know, the only solution most of them know is, well, all you need is another med. It's like, excuse me, meds are the problem.
Right.
They're not the solution.
Well, he wants to go back to school. He knows how to present himself. The dean said, if you can get somebody on the outside to approve your coming back and your parents or your grandparents approve, then you can come back. So he's talking about coming back, and he got approval from he had a physical yesterday. Come on, Adam. And the doctor said that, sure, you can go back. And my self-preservative, not very loving thought is let him go back and crash one more time because he's so resistant, and then we'll deal with it because he'll finally maybe be convinced that he needs some help. But that's not safe to do that.
Not safe. He's going back into the environment that is a big part of
He knows
what
that.
Induces that
he
kind
knows.
of behavior.
Right. Come on in. Yeah.
Do you know anybody that that might come and talk to him as an NA sponsor?
You know, that would be a good idea. I took him to an NA meeting, and it was high drama. He kept running out. Another guy and I kept running after him, convincing him to come back. He'd sit there agitated, pacing, going to the men's room. Finally, he ran out for the last time, and so that was a complete psychodrama. It didn't work.
Of course, he knows how to play the game.
Yeah, he does.
Sounds like he knows how to play the game, so he can keep it stirring. But if you can find a sponsor, someone who knows that game from both sides, that can catch him in his game and support him through recognizing he needs some assistance, and that's someone who isn't, you know, full on with the medical approach, which is, well, we'll smother him with another drug, and then, hey, this won't be a problem. But I would think that would maybe be one of the best, if you can, you know, maybe go back to the people that you you connected in with that NA meeting and see if you can find somebody that knows how to work with a kid that age. It's a definite skill.
Well, that sounds doable, because I could keep him here. Not that I want to anymore. I would love to have him just disappear. I'm telling you, that's how much love I'm showing right now. Is this is just too much. But
I understand. I hear you.
I think, I'd love to have
Where's
somebody
his mom
come
at this
to the
point?
House. She's in Florida, and she's working full time, and she's very relieved that he's staying with us. She couldn't possibly keep him there because she's not there all day. He would just be knocking around the house and finding ways of getting stuff to take. Tim and I are in a good position to do this. We just need, Tim is peaceful. Tim just observes, and he's just, you know, he says, well, Jacob's kind of quirky, and that's pretty much his take on it. And I'm in red hot panic and doing my worksheets, and, you know, we tend to react very differently. Tim is helping out around the house to take some of the load off me because there's extra cooking and stuff going on, but
I think if you can find a dual diagnosis sponsor, counselor, from, you know, you might call around some of the drug, alcohol, because, you know, has he been doing alcohol as well, or is it just different drugs?
Yeah, he does everything. He does anything he can get
so
his hands
you
on.
Probably a dual diagnosis counselor that knows how to deal with a teenager and, you know, the stresses a teenager is going through and can speak his language.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably that would be my highest thought. And,
okay.
There are probably some good people there, and the best way to key into them would be probably through whoever connected you in with that NA group, and specifically look for somebody that's worked with teenagers that knows how to talk the teenager's language and knows the wily mind of the teenager in the culture and all the tricks they can play, because that's a big part of being able to work through that and get a kid like him to recognize he really does have a problem that's life-threatening.
Yeah,
life
and he would say, well,
sanity.
He would say, well, so what? I don't really want to live anyway. I mean, he's really giving us a line. I think he means it too, but he promised he wouldn't do anything. But
yeah. So that would need to be thrown in the mix if he threatened suicide with an alcohol and drug counselor.
Yeah.
Or an NA member, and it may not even be a counselor. It may just be another young person who's been there, done that, and come out the other side and is willing to support people in that walk, because it's a tough walk. For a kid that age who's straight and sober, it's a tough walk, let alone all the things he's got going on, and a father, you know, in the realm that his father was in. I mean, it's just he needs somebody who's walked that road, who can gain his confidence and walk it with him, would be my highest thought.
Okay, that's a good high thought. Thanks.
In the meantime, we'll certainly hold a space for him and for you, and delighted that you're using it as your opportunity to move through your next layer.
I have to keep reminding myself of that, Michael.
I understand. Been there, done that.
Okay.
So is there anything we can do to support you personally in this process?
Well, I've got the tools. I'm super tired because he comes up at night and visits us. And so I'm just trying to eat well. And I escaped to my son's house, which I told you I was right now, so that he
right,
didn't come
right.
and knock on the door. I feel as if my thread is getting quite thin. I know that's
yeah.
not a good image to use, but my daughter's going to Al-Anon and says it's extremely helpful. And she said, Mom, I've tried everything, and he may not live, and I have to be okay with that. And
yeah,
I'm
that's
not
a
there
tough
yet.
One, and it's true.
Yeah.
True. You know, sometimes steps need to be taken that leave a kid in that position in great risk, and sometimes they're not going to make it.
Yeah.
And that is something that you need to resolve, that if that occurs, one, you're not responsible, and two,
mm-hmm.
that you, it's kind of like you pre-approve. You know, it's like a person on their deathbed doesn't want to go because you're hurting, and it's like, you give permission for them to go, and when you give permission, if they go, then you rejoice in them going rather than, you know, playing out more trauma. And
right.
so having even a conversation with him in your head where you give him permission, if that's what he needs to do, and free your emotional blindnesses in that regard will
wow,
open a space for you to be more capable. Say again?
That's an amazing and powerful thing to say, for you to say to me and for me to think, to allow in. It just stretches the boundaries a little, includes more possibilities.
I hear you. And, you know, there's no easy way around that one. You know, young people playing with drugs and alcohol like that, they die. It happens too often. And
yeah.
if you're not stuck in guilt and trauma as a possibility, if that occurs, then you've got a clearer mind with which to support him through the other side, whichever way he decides to go. But he's the one who's going to be making the decisions and the choices, not you.
Yeah. That's a great relief to hear. And I have been with him enough now to know how hard he fights for his illness and
mm-hmm.
how much I've done, which has fallen on deaf ears, I think. I'm not sure. So that's very helpful. I don't think I would go through a whole guilt thing. I would have if I hadn't done what I've done, but he, in 1 week, has pushed us to our limit.
Yep. Yeah, I hear you.
So, anyway, thank you for your counseling and listening. Jeannie too. Hello, Jeannie.
Well, you know where we are reachable, and anytime we can be of support, radio show time or not. But I would definitely get the Avacyn back and get his hand in it. If you can get some congestion
yeah.
clearing out, you may see some magnificent changes.
Yeah, well, he did clear up for a day or two on ibuprofen, and that is a known, Dr. Tim said, that was a known response to inflammation of the brain. And if that's what was making him psychotic and he responded that way, then you could go with that, treat him for a few more days, but he's refusing, even though he felt better, and he's saying that it's because of this anti-anxiety pill, or this, I think what it is he's microdosing again, and he's feeling better. He's feeling giddily better. He's dancing up and down the street, calling out to strangers, being super friendly, and this is a shy introvert boy. So,
mm-hmm. So he's got his hands on more drugs.
Yeah.
Well, I
okay.
I offer a big star for your efforts in holding the space. It's huge.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, yeah.
So any other thoughts? Anything else we can support you with?
Not at the moment, Michael. I'm heading home. Just wish us luck. He's probably
okay,
home wondering where the heck I am.
Heart. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks.
Holding you in our hearts.
Bye.
All right.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye.
Difficult road to travel.
Yeah, a tough place to be.
Yep. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody else in the chat room with anything to say? Or anybody with a hand up in the phone queue?
No, it is all quiet. Tippy is with us in the chat room, so welcome from
awesome.
Thailand. Yeah. But there are no hands up. Switchboard's pretty full. So if someone has a question, press 1. Michael's unloading the vehicle. Give him a few minutes, and then he'll be able to do the reading from the book. We have 33 minutes left in the show.
We are getting ready to head off to Massanutten to get some in-law time with our granddaughter for a week starting Sunday, and I'm working to get the greenhouse closed in so that all of our winter vegetables and especially our precious tomatoes make it through the week we're gone. So I've just been out getting the last, what I hope are the last supplies for the greenhouse, and all systems go. So how can we support you? Our calling number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, it's 563-999-3581. If you call that number, we're having a conversation. If you push 1, if you're on one of those stations where you can't see you, that's the number to call so that we can have a conversation. And we would love to have a conversation with you. So what's on your mind? Are we going to have silence through the rest of the show? We can write a song and echo the sound of silence. And the people bowed and prayed to the neon gods they made. Thank you, Simon and Garfunkel, for some of the great stuff you put together.
Yeah. Their calling number is 563-999-3581, and press 1. That raises a hand and puts you into queue. And since I immediately started talking to Susan, I didn't invite you to go to the website, which is whyagain.org, whyagain.org. You can click on the Start Here button, which is in the upper left corner, or you can scroll down and hit the bullseye in the middle of the page. Both of those take you to the same place. And that is where you'll find all the tools and explanations of how to get started in this work if you're not familiar with it, how to refresh your memory if you've been away from it for a while, and how to move forward with your work. So I invite you to go there. So nobody's pressing 1, so I guess we go to the reading.
Okay. Just give me about 1 minute. Maybe tell people
all right.
About the path. and I'll get to the book.
Okay, I'll do that. So the app has been renovated or improved, and so if you haven't updated it on your phone, whether it's an Android or an iPhone, go and click the update. It now has the commitments on there. There have been changes made so that the print issue is cleared up. You can either when you click print, you have the option. You can either save it to your phone as a PDF, or you can actually print it to a printer if you have your phone connected to a printer at your house. And so that works out good too. And so you have those options with the app, and they had been giving us a little bit of challenges before, and I think we've got all that cleared up. Let me know if you run into anything else. And the worksheets on the website have been cleaned up as well, so there shouldn't be any issues there either. So just let us know. You can drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. Let me know if you run into any URL on the website that's not working right. I am back to working on the product list. I'm hoping to get it completed before we leave Sunday, because I know we're going to be super busy, and I want to keep the work part of next week to a minimal. So hopefully I'll have the products cleared up before we leave. It's going to be grandparents' weekend. Ryan and Gabby, my son and his wife, are headed off with some friends of theirs and on a couples vacation. So we have Aria. So it's going to be Michael and myself and Aria and my dad and then Gabby's parents. And so it's all the grandparents and great-grandparents with Aria. And so she will absolutely be a joy next week, I am sure. So are you back? Michael, if you're talking, we can't hear you. While I'm waiting to see if Michael's joined us, Ann has put her hand up, so I'm going to click her on. Area code 760, you're on the air. Hi, Ann.
Hey there. While Michael's in transition, maybe you can still hear and you can share anyway. Listening to Susan's situation, and I had, texted her before too, but today listening to it reminded me of Mitzi's book and the whole thing that she went through with her son, Journey. And so I grabbed the book, and it just sounds so much. I just wondered if you guys agreed with that and maybe getting information for professional intervention would be on their website.
I thought of the exact same thing of Journey's Dream. So yeah. And Susan has dropped off of the switchboard, so I will definitely text her and see if she has looked at that, because it's just about exactly the same story of what Rex and Mitzi went through with Journey.
Right, and then I was thinking of, her going to Al-Anon as well, but I can always text her that, but I think she's got enough information. And the reason I pulled the book out, I just happened to know where it was the subtitle of Mitzi's book, about her son, is A Mother's Account of Love, Loss, and Spiritual Healing. And I just, that subtitle just triggered that. For Susan, because it just sounds so much like you said. So I'm not the only one thinking that.
I thought of the exact same thing. I agree totally.
Okay. Yeah, because I know, Dr. Tim mentioned, different references for the things and that whole integrative health thing that just happened, and just the resources on Journey's Dream. So, okay. Awesome. That's all I have. Thank you.
I will definitely send her the link to that, and I'll also put it in the notes for today, too. So thank you for mentioning it, Ann.
Sure.
All right.
Okay, blessings. Enjoy your weekend with the kids.
Thank you. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. I'm not sure if we're going to be the most spoiled or if she is. It's going to be great. So, welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here, and we'll touch in with our reading of the next section from the chapter on inherited patterns. And, you know, in the conversation we just had with Susan, we're seeing a young man who's reflecting some of the patterns of his generations. That's major stuff to work through. And no easy road for it. Consistent, persistent application of the tools can take the pressure off. So at the point where we're talking to Richard about the chain of abuse that happens oftentimes in families, and asked Richard if he'd be willing to look into some things, and he says yes, and then he changes the subject, and I bring him back to, well, is there any chance you're changing the subject to avoid here? He said, well, I'm willing, he says, with a trace of fear flashing across his face. So I ask him the question as we're stepping in. He's talked about how life was in his family system. And I ask him the question, have you ever thought of that living with you might be like walking through a minefield? No, of course not, came his indignant reply. Are you feeling defensive, Richard? Well, perhaps a little. Wouldn't you be? Probably. But I want to be clear that the purpose of bringing things to the surface is to gently look, own them, and let go of what does not work. I'm on your team and want to support you in that process. Has anyone ever given you the feedback about a minefield before? Richard did admit that he had been told more than once that living with him was like walking on eggshells. He again affirmed that he'd never thought of himself in that way. I offer him the information. Seldom do we see ourselves as others see us, and most people never take the time to listen to what others are really saying. Truly taking the time to listen to others provides us with the opportunity to look differently at unconsciously driven behavior, as does being aware of our responses to what others say. He thought your relationships and your words are mirrors of your mind. I spoke about his making a practice of searching for his patterns of unconscious driven behavior. I reminded him of our opening conversation or misconversation about responsibility. Recall, Richard, we experienced the same actuality. We even heard identical words, but your listening spoke to you of fault and blame, while mine informed me of responsibility. Remember the upset that surfaced for you and how much hostility he expressed. Actually, he says, I didn't express nearly as much as I felt at that moment. When upset surfaces, we call it an opportunity to forgive, an opportunity to learn to let go of the tendency to blame others for what they trigger in us. Most people tend to experience their mind's interpretation of events in the world and think that is what is actually happening. We tend to think ours is the only truth. Like ripples distort the image on the surface of a pond, there's always some distortion of the images output from the mind when we're in upset. The truth cannot be reflected accurately in a disturbed mind. So hostility or fear, active in the mind, tells us that the mind is engaged in the use of corrupt data, and that it is not reflecting accurately the truth. If you can begin to suspect that, then you can begin to change the deeper levels of content of your mind. If you believe what your surface mind is telling you, what your disturbed mind is telling you, if you believe that a mind in hostility or fear can possibly tell you the truth, then it's going to be to look beyond your mind's lies. A mind in hostility or fear will never give you good advice. A mind in hostility or fear will always give you words, thoughts, and rationalizations that will tend to continue the process of disturbance. It's kind of a self-perpetuating thing. The idea of forgiveness is to interrupt those patterns and get back to the truth that's really happening in the moment. And one of the games, one of the pseudo-solutions in non-being mind is to just perpetuate, muddy the water, create more disturbance, more accusation, more hallucinations, the mind generating more garbage to justify its defenses and its beliefs. But simply put, hostility and fear means your mind's lying to you. Now, if you've relied on a mind that's lied to you all your life, you have this rocky road of relationships behind you, and you still believe what your mind tells you. Our objective here is to get each person who's in disturbance to recognize that their disturbance, internal experience, and that if they do what it takes to collapse the perceptual output of their minds, they will process through the corrupt data and arrive at their mind where, or pardon me, arrive at the place where their minds can more accurately give them the truth of what's going on in any given situation. Hostility and fear won't give you that gift. It's just not possible. So another of the reasons for forgiveness is to collapse the liar. And you don't need to know any more about what's going on in a situation, just that your mind is in hostility or fear. To know that, it's lying to you. And there's no resolution in that. Now, what most people call resolution is, well, we'll have a power struggle. We'll have a fight about it. And whoever wins the fight, then they'll win the argument. It's like, no, there are no winners in that game. Each person in hostility or fear that's willing to return to a mind connected to love is a winner in that game. Not an easy process. But it's doable. And so we're here to offer support for engaging in the tools, for acquiring the skills, and healing. And healing in this context means the removal of hostility and fear, rather than reinforcing the hostile and fearful thoughts, the thoughts that reinforce symptoms, the calling forward of the active presence of love to become free of that. How do you do that? Well, the answer to that is always the same, all of the above. If you went back 10 years ago to the first hour of this show, this is a seminar, a workshop that's been going on for 10 years now, 5 days a week, an hour to 2 hours a day for 10 years. If you went back and listened to every word that I've said, that Jeannie said, that Dr. Tim has said, Michelle has said in that 10 years, what you would hear is a description of what to do about the situation you're in today. There are many tools that come from many directions that we present, from the nutritional to the physical to the mental to the emotional, and to the spiritual. And the most powerful is calling forward of active present love in one mind. If you can bring it into two, it's like a mathematical progression.
If you can bring it into three, it's stronger yet. So if there's anybody out there in listener land with a question, how about pushing one and let's have a conversation? Anything we can do to support you? Did anybody, you know, we never heard from one person about the Mind Shifters. Did anybody write the Mind Shifter? Did anybody work with that one we talked about last week? And if so, what did it bring up for you? What kind of results did it produce for you? And to share that, if you push one, and Jeannie will introduce you by area code, and we'll be having a conversation. And we would love to have a conversation with you. Again, if you're on one of those stations where we can't hear you, call in numbers 563-999-3581. Push one. That puts you in queue to have a conversation. Jeannie will introduce you by your area code. We've got about 15 minutes, so let's go for it. Time for the dialogue. Time for the conversation to flow in two directions.
I had a couple of people text me about the sharing of my dream about the deer being shot and falling at
right.
my feet and saying, hold the space while you eat me. And mm-hmm. on their input plus, looking up some stuff on dream interpretation and everything, there were a few things that came
right.
out that are really, they resonate. And I haven't had a chance to look into it further, but some of the things are, I had started rewriting or writing again in my book. And one of the things that came up was the loss of innocence. And so that's part of what my book is about. It talks about graceful passing into another portion of your life, a need to reevaluate what's best for you. And then another one said some situation or something in your life is taking your life energy out of you. And then another one was that it was a shadow aspect of my persona and the need to defend and experiencing self-doubt and insecurity. So perhaps the deer was telling me to hold the space while I looked at those situations in my life. I don't know. So I'll look into that a little further. And thank you for those who did text and comment. And I agree that it's connected somehow to the Native American aspect of me. And, that they gave thanks when they killed an animal or something. They gave thanks for the animal. It wasn't just a crazy sport or whatever.
Right.
So thank you all for that.
As you say that, sweetie, it occurs to me, you go back to Yeshua and he says, in order for you to live, you need to die. In order for the true being to live. And you've been doing, especially with going back and working on your book, more and more of that, literally digesting that self that needs to die. That self that is based in falsehood, as you've been coming into your own, coming into more clarity and more power. And so perhaps that could also be applied to, and I hadn't thought of it this way, but as you say, put those other thoughts forward that, your Rukka is saying to you, stay conscious as you digest yourself, the lowercase self, as you, the uppercase self, digest the lowercase self. Hold the space, keep love present, and instead of falling back into that self when it's resonated, when it's activated. And you'll metabolize it, you'll digest it.
Yep, it sounds right on.
Yeah. One of the things Ram Dass, he's got a book, actually. I haven't read it, but I'm a little bit familiar with it. It's called Grist for the Mill. And in some teachings, they'll actually, allow new students to come in and they'll literally use them just like fodder in a cannon fodder in a battle, World War I, World War II, they talked about cannon fodder. And they'll use the new students that come in as, grist for the mill. And stay conscious as you're digesting and moving through that lowercase self, lowercase self, and eating it, metabolizing it. And becoming dear to yourself. Maybe there's a reason it was a deer. Deer.
That's a thought.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we've got about 10 minutes left. So if you're out there in listener land, what's on your mind? Push one. Let's have a conversation. And if we're complete for dialogue today, then I'm going to just go back to work on getting things done so that our journeys will be able to wind up all the loose ends we've got. And we'll say thank you for joining us and create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.